We've come to expect that we have to fight over what's taught in our schools, but that's really not the case. When you let parents get the kind of schooling that they want for their own children, it lessens social conflict and allows people, very much like in religion in our society, to get what they want without imposing it on their neighbors.
What is at the absolute top of your school reform list?
Right at the top would be non-refundable education tax credits. Tax credits are basically a way of allowing people to afford private schooling, who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford it, and they have an advantage over the other common policy approach to that, vouchers, which is that they tend to bring with them a lot less regulation.
Anybody can get a tax credit for giving money to a nonprofit?
Right, there's actually education? Two different kinds. The most common kind of tax credit that exists right now is a scholarship donation tax credit. So a business or an individual says, instead of giving my money to the state through my taxes as I normally would, where it will go to the public school system, I can donate to a nonprofit scholarship fund. That fund then provides scholarships to low-income families so they can afford private
schooling. Where has this been tried and what are the results so far?
Lots of states have scholarship programs like this. Florida, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Iowa, there's a couple of others. And there have been very few studies of the academic impacts, but in every case, they are extremely popular and they are very fast growing. Tax credit programs like this are growing much faster, about twice as fast as voucher programs.
Talk a little bit about social conflict over government-owned and operated schools.
Yeah, well, a lot of people have noticed that we've had school wars in this country since we've had public schools. The big fight over the teaching of evolution in the classroom, sex education, school prayer, and on and on and on. And this is typical. We've come to expect that we have to fight over what's taught in our schools. But that's really not the case. When you let parents get the kind of schooling that they want for their own children, it lessens social conflict and allows people, very much like in religion in our society, to get what they want without imposing it on their neighbors.
What do you say to people who are like, yeah, but then we'll have a bunch of schools teaching creationism and we won't be able to compete intergalactically with the, you know, a space race of aliens?
Yeah, the irony here is that people who value the teaching of science and evolution in the classroom should be the first on board for school choice, because if you look at the understanding by the general public of the theory of evolution, it is incredibly poor. And that's after 50 or 60 years of the theory of evolution being the official curriculum in the government school. So what we have now is not working as far as teaching science goes.
Does school choice, and whether it's through vouchers or tax credits, what kind of religious questions, separation of religion and state, does that impose?
You know, the Supreme Court looked at this in Zelman v. Simmons-Harris, a case about an Ohio school voucher program in 2002, and they found that there was no conflict, there was no government endorsement of religion when the money was going to the parents, and it was only the parents who were choosing a religious or a secular school.
So it's the same effectively as getting a Pell Grant and going to a religious college, or a student loan, a government guaranteed student loan, and taking it to a private college that's religious.
Exactly. There is still an issue though with compulsion. A lot of states have these clauses in their constitutions called compelled support clauses that forbid the government from compelling anyone to support a religious institution. So any school system that funds religious schools is compelling taxpayers to support those schools. And so you can have a state constitutional violation, even though the federal constitution is not a problem. Fortunately, tax credits avoid that, because under a tax credit program, you're either spending your money on yourself, in which case it's not the government's money, or you're making a private donation to a scholarship fund, and you get to choose a religious one or a secular one, so there's no compulsion.
What's your best guess for when the Berlin Wall of the school monopoly is finally going to be torn down?
I think within 5 to 10 years, we're going to see at least one state that has a pretty substantial market in education outside of the public school system. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Florida, because that state has a tax credit program that's now on schedule to grow automatically every year for the next 5 or 6 years.
Will a tax credit program save money or increase educational outcomes?
It'll do both. In Florida, there's been an assessment of the fiscal impact of their scholarship donation tax credit. Saves $1.49 for every dollar it reduces state revenue. So it's a 50% return on investment, and it's increasing the educational options to families, so it's doing both.
How do you answer the criticism that I'm sure is coming, which is that, yeah, but it drains money from the public school system?
Actually, per pupil spending in public schools tends to stay about the same or increase under school choice programs. So per pupil, the system is as well off or better off. Will the system as a whole spend less money if it's educating fewer kids? Yes, but then that's pretty much what you would expect.
Why are teachers always, whenever people talk about school choice, suddenly the conversation seems to shift from children to teachers?
Certainly, I think we would like everyone to do well by a system, but obviously the goal of an education system, first and foremost, is to serve the kids, and they should be the center of it. The reason that teachers so often become the central issue in school choice debates is that they have one of the most powerful and organized and largest lobby groups, the teachers' unions, in the country.
Andrew Coulson, Cato Institute, thank you very much.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.